private. Drink, philander, gamble, talk sedition. But don't do it at the foot of Queen Anne's statue. A colossal humbug.
You're going to be abusive, Borden.
No, not at all. I just begin to see things very clearly. I see that I'll never do for this smug profession, because unlike most people, I wear my faults where I wear my heart, on my sleeve. Perhaps I'd do better growing coffee in Kenya.
Your present proclivity, you might.
At least I'd be free of cant and hypocrisy, and all the mean egotisms and shabby little rivalries. Oh, Polchester's a sink.
I think you've said enough.
Oh, I should laugh if I saw it race to the ground. Nothing would give me greater pleasure than to see the back of your beloved Queen Anne. And all she stands for. Oh, don't bother ringing for Vance to show me out. Another way.
Insufferable young rebel.
I'm disturbing you, Smith.
Oh, hello, Borden. Come in. I was only looking up some history references.
What, on Saturday night?
Afraid so.
You're incorrigible, Smith. And you ever stop working? For heaven's sake, shut those books and let's have a drink.
Oh, yeah. Isn't it a little early?
Early? Well, it's 6 o'clock, man. What are you waiting for?
I very rarely take more than one sherry just before dinner.
Oh, you're too damned abstemious. That's the trouble with you. I'll have a whiskey if you've got any.
I think I have a little.
Oh, thank you. I'll go out and get drunk. Tomorrow is Sunday. I can sleep it off. Did you say you had no more whiskey?
I'm afraid not.
Well, then I won't detain you any longer. My glass is empty. Have a nice rubber. Good night.
Good night, Borden.
Well, how about a whiskey and soda before we begin our game? Smith?
Thank you. But only a small one, Holmes.
Lord Stevenson, of course.
Yes, please, Holmes.
Yes.
I say, do you think we might have that other window open?
By all means. I meant to open it before you came in. It's a very hot night.
Indeed. Quite airless. Almost as though we were in for a storm.
What's this I hear about Borden leaving at the end of term?
Really? Who told you that?
McElraith. He was going to see the head this morning when Borden came stamping out of the study in a fine old rage. He said he'd just been fired.
I can't say I'm very surprised. I mean, if he must get drunk, why not choose the privacy of his own room?
Well, personally, I've no patience with a man who doesn't know when he's had enough.
Borden always reminds me of a volcano, an almost constant eruption. Surplus of energy, that's his trouble.
I'd like to have him in the OTC. Put him through a route march or two in full equipment. That would take some of the bounce out of him.
Ah, hello, Starkey. Come to watch. Mix yourself a drink.
Thanks. I must say I can do with it. I just had a thoroughly nasty shock. In our house, too, Stevenson.
Eh?
Well, I dropped in to have a chat with you, and Borden almost knocked me over. He came rushing out of your study just as I was about to open the door.
Well, what the blazes was he doing in my room?
Now, don't ask me. But he was absolutely blotto. He danced round me in the passage, waving a rifle in his hand. Like an absolute madman.
Rifle? Good Lord, he must have pinched it from my study.
I didn't know you were in the habit of keeping rifles in your room, Stevenson. I thought they were all locked up in the store.
Well, so they are. But Sergeant Major Wilkins has been on the warpath recently. He wanted to show me how slack the boys are getting about cleaning rifles. Well, this afternoon he picked out the half dozen filthiest and brought them along to show me. I suppose I should have locked the door when I left tonight, but it never occurred to me that anyone would walk in and grab one. What a blasted nerve Borden's got. Did you take it from him, Starkey?
Not likely.
Well, why the hell didn't you?
Oh, I'm no match for Borden when he's sober, let alone when he's drunk. Besides, he was dancing about like a dervish. I think he might have gone off in my face.
Oh, don't be a fool. He couldn't have done. None of the rifles was loaded.
Well, he said he was going to blow the head off Queen Anne. Must have got some cartridges from somewhere.
Oh, what an idiot.
Last I saw of him, he was dashing off in the direction of the quad. Thought I'd better come here and tell you about it before he goes quite mad and runs.
Look, I'll be back later, Holt. I'd better just see what's going on.
Right.
There's no need to hold the game up, though. Starkey can take my place.
Well, shall we cut for partners? Now, that's you and me, Smith. Your deal, Starkey.
I must say, if you'd seen Borden dancing about in that passage, well, I think you'd have been as scared as I was.
I'm sure I should. Borden is captured, not a pretty sight.
Especially with a lethal weapon in his hand.
Leave him to Stevenson. He'll deal with him all right.
One gets a
attached to a place and to the people. I shall miss Polchester. Miss you all, in fact.
You'll be missed too, McElrath.
Oh, thank you. That's always heartening to hear. On the other hand, that is not.
What?
The moping owl does to the moon complain. I hate the sound.
Do you? No, I rather like it.
Perhaps it arouses all my Highland sense of superstition.
You think it's a bird of ill omen, then?
Undoubtedly, it has that reputation.
I suppose it has. Well, McElwraith, I think I'd better...
Yes, you'd better be going home. I see Holt's house is lit up. The Saturday night card party. I think I'll look in for a wee while and catch the gangsters.
Yes. Well, then I'll say good night.
Good night, Grange, and my regards to your wife.
Thank you.
Well, that's game and rubber to us, partner.
Oh, so it is.
And we're down 400 points, Starkey.
Oh, dear, I'm sorry.
I must say you took a risk with that trump lead.
Yes, well, I'm afraid it didn't come off. Pity.
Now, let's have a drink. Ah, Stevenson. Well, what about Borden?
I can't find him. Looked everywhere. Mm. He's probably hiding in some corner. You know how cunning drunks are. But I've locked up my study like the proverbial stable door and had a look around the dormitories. And everything seems to be all right. There's nothing more I can do.
Oh, dear, just in time for a drink. And the end of the rubber.
Now, who won?
Starkey and I lost.
Well, I think you might be getting back to the house, Starkey. Doesn't do for both of us to be away together, especially tonight with that fool Borden on the rampage.
No, I'll go now.
Yeah, and let me know if you have any more trouble.
I certainly shall. Good night, all. Oh, thanks for the game.
Good night.
I don't wish to disturb you.
You're not. We've just finished a rubber. Come and join us. Take my place.
No, Holt. Thank you all the same. Please go on with your game. I shall enjoy watching you play.
Well, sit down then and let me give you a whiskey.
I won't say no to that.
All right, shall we cut the deal?
Oh, cut for me, partner.
Yeah. That was your deal, Smith.
Here's your whiskey, McElrath.
Oh, thank you.
Now, whose call?
It's mine.
You were a tower of strength last time, partner. Keep it up.
I'll do my best.
Diamond.
Two clubs.
Two spades.
What on earth was that?
It sounds like someone firing a shot in the quad.
That's Borden.
Borden? What do you mean?
It seems that he's prowling about the grounds this evening, dead drunk, with a rifle he took from Stevenson's study.
But this is most alarming.
I'll let him stew in his own juice. He's more likely to harm himself than anyone else. Let's get on with the game.
The shot was fired at 10 minutes to 11. Counsel said witness seemed very positive about the time. Witness replied that he had no doubt whatever. When pressed, he added that on hearing the shot, he had looked at his watch.
Does that make it 5 to 11?
Well, you're both wrong. The precise time is 7 minutes to. I checked it with the wireless tonight. Now, where were we? A diamond, two clubs, two spades. Partner?
No bid.
Two, no trumps.
Whoever can that be?
It may possibly be Thorold. His light was on in his study when I crossed the quad. He's working late.
Hello? Yes, who... Oh, yes, Vance. I didn't recognize your voice for the moment. Yes?
What?
Yes, right away.
What's the matter, Holt?
Something frightful has happened. Thorold's been shot.
Shot? Good God.
We must go at once.
Well, Doctor?
I've made an examination. The bullet has pierced the left temple and lodged itself in the brain. He must have died instantly.
Can you tell from where the shot was fired?
Well, from out there, through the open window. At almost point-blank range, I should say.
Vance, did you hear anything or notice anything suspicious?
No, sir, nothing. Mr. Thorold rang for me about half an hour ago. He told me earlier this evening that he would be working late and might like some coffee. So, of course, I waited up. When he rang, I came in here at once. He was sitting at his desk in front of the open window writing. He asked me to make some coffee. While I was in the kitchen, I heard a shot outside the house in the direction of the quadrangle, and then almost at once a dull thud as though something had fallen in the study. I rushed in here and found Mr. Thorold lying crumpled up on the floor with blood pouring from his forehead. I took one look at him and rang you up, sir. There was no answer, so I rang up Mr. Holt. That's all I know, sir.
Thank you, Vance. A shocking experience for you.
It was, sir.
Well, suicide can be ruled out of the question. This is either accident or murder. Have you telephoned the police?
Not yet. We waited to hear your opinion first.
Oh, good God, man, they must be told at once.
You're acting headmaster now, McElroy, so I think that's your job.
Yes, I suppose it is. Hello, this is Poulterster School.
What?
Oh, Poulterster 3691. Give me the police station, please. It's most urgent.
Who is it? Come in. Oh, hello, Smith.
Hello, Borden.
Well, nice of you to call, old chap. But, damn it, need you come so early, huh? Haven't shaved or had a bath or anything.
Borden, you've got to pull yourself together.
What, again? Well, you told me that yesterday.
This is not a joking matter, so do be serious for once. Perhaps you don't know what's happened?
Queen Anne's fallen off her pedestal.
Thorold is dead.
Huh? Say that again.
He was found shot dead in his study last night.
Was he indeed? Suicide? A guilty conscience, I wouldn't wonder.
There's no question of suicide. Someone shot him through the open window of the study while he was writing at his desk.
By God, this will give Poulterster something to think about. This will galvanize the torpid body of our society.
It is doing, I can tell you.
Any suspects?
At the moment, only one. All the evidence points to you.
Me? It's damn silly.
This is no joke, Borden. The bullet which killed Thorold is of the same caliber, .22... as those we use on the school range.
Well?
You took a rifle from Stevenson's study last night. You told Starkey that you were going to blow the head off the statue in the quad. Later, we all heard the shot. We were playing cards in Holt's house. We heard you fire the rifle. It was quite loud.
That, my dear chap, is quite impossible. You couldn't have done.
What do you mean?
Well, I took aim at the statue, pressed the trigger, and the damn thing didn't go off. It's hardly surprising. I'd forgotten to load it. That's what happens when you're fuddled. I hadn't any cartridges. Silly of me, wasn't it?
What did you do with the rifle?
Oh, I cursed it and flung it away.
Where?
I haven't the faintest idea. I don't know, probably in someone's flower bed.
Then why haven't the police been able to find it? They've searched high and low. There's no trace of it anywhere.
Well, obviously someone came across it, picked it up, and carted it off.
Anyone who'd done that would have told the police about it by now. But if what you say is true about the rifle not going off, it means that the shot we all heard was fired by someone else. Someone who'd got hold of that rifle after you flung it away. Someone who had ammunition and used it.
Who is the mysterious assassin? And why did he kill Thorold? Not that he doesn't have my sympathy there.
Well, that's a callous thing to say, Borden. Thorold may have had his faults, oh, I know.
His dirty little vices, you mean. You're too kind-hearted, Smith. That's the trouble with you. You see the best in everybody.
Yes. Well, I try to.
Well, you're wasting your time, old chap. Take my word for it. Most people are stinkers. And Thorold was a prize one.
Borden, what's this?
Oh, I wish you'd sit down. Now, what have you found?
This small, empty box with a green label. It's had cartridges in it. Where did you get it?
Oh, a boy gave it to me.
How on earth did a boy get hold of a box full of cartridges?
Oh, my dear chap, there weren't cartridges in it.
Well, what was in it, then?
Oh, bugs, beetles, moths, or something. I've forgotten. What the hell does it matter?
It matters a great deal. This is the first thing Scotland Yard will pounce on when they question you.
Scotland Yard?
Oh, yes. The chairman of directors has been in touch with the chief constable of the county and requested that Scotland Yard be called in. Sir Luke is coming down from London this morning.
Oh, you better put in a good word for me. You and he are old pals, aren't you?
I don't know about old pals. We've known one another for a good many years. In fact, ever since we were up at Oxford together. But there's one thing I advise you to do, Borden.
What's that?
Throw this empty box in the fire. Burn it.
Would you like a cigar, Smith?
If you don't mind, Sir Luke, I think I'll stick to my pipe.
Seen the morning paper?
Yes, I have.
Nice front page headline, isn't it? Mystery murder at famous public school.
trust Fleet Street to make the most of it.
Of course. This sort of thing is a godsend to them. As a matter of fact, I'm very glad to have this opportunity of talking to you alone.
Yes.
Tell me, what sort of a fellow is Borden? Do you know him well?
Fairly well, I think.
How does he strike you?
Oh, warm-hearted, impulsive, erratic.
Given to the bottle, I understand.
It's his one weakness, I'm afraid.
McElrake tells me that Thorold gave Borden his dismissal yesterday morning. So he seems to have had pretty good grounds for disliking Thorold.
Well, you don't kill a man, Sir Luke, merely because you happen to dislike him. To be frank, several of the staff had reasons for disliking Thorold.
Oh?
Oh, yes. He wasn't an easy person to get on with, you know. He was inclined to bully those people who couldn't stand up to him.
Really?
Mm. He had his favorites. Fortunately, I was one. I don't quite know why, for we had very little in common. Holt was another, and among the younger masters, Balver.
I remember how Thorold fought for that appointment. Personally, I was rather against it.
Oh, were you?
I didn't see why we needed Italian and French taught in Colchester. No other public school does it. However, the other governors felt differently, so Thorold had his way.
I must say, I admired him for the way he supported Balboa. It wasn't very easy for a young Italian to take his place among us.
No, I don't suppose it was.
But Thorold wasn't prepared to support Borden. He had his likes and dislikes, you see.
You know, there's one feature of this case that strikes me as being very strange. The disappearance of the rifle. Now, I should have thought a rifle an awkward thing to conceal in a place swarming with boys.
Yes, but I'm not sure. There isn't something even more strange, Sir Luke.
Oh, what?
Well, Borden says, and I'm inclined to believe him, that he never fired the rifle he took from Stevenson's rooms because it wasn't loaded and he had no cartridges, so he flung it away.
Where?
Of course, he can't remember where. Well, what seems odd is that the person who found that rifle and fired the shot we all heard, which presumably killed Thorold, should have left so much to chance.
But how do you mean?
Assuming that he had a motive for killing Thorold, why should he have waited until a weapon was put in his hand accidentally?
Yes, that certainly is baffling.
And what could the motive possibly have been?
I'm able to throw some light on that.
Oh, really?
Let me speak frankly and in the strictest confidence. Thorold was up to his neck in debt.
Really? You astonish me.
Yes, I was astonished myself when I heard of it. I don't mind telling you, it worried me a good deal. I mean, a man in Thorold's position of trust and authority, head of Colchester, with all the responsibilities that go with that job, has no business to get into debt.
Why did he? Do you know?
Well, apparently he was speculating heavily, putting money into a lot of crazy ventures that wouldn't have taken in a country clergyman. Not his own money, either.
Ah, yes.
Someone who had lent him money and saw no hope of getting it back approached me about it. Well, that's how I got to know. I may as well tell you, Smith, that the governor's intended to have him up on the mat about the whole thing at the end of this term. Well, it wouldn't have been at all pleasant.
Indeed not.
As it is, we have to face something even more unpleasant now. There's the inquest. Police court proceedings are bound to follow. Somebody's bound to be arrested. There'll be a trial. Columns and columns in the newspapers. Colchester will be dragged in the dirt before it's all over. It's a nasty business altogether.
Most unpleasant.
No, I don't relish it. Mm. Thank your stars, Smith, that you're not in my position. You see what a weight rests upon my shoulders.
No, I do indeed.
Well, thank heaven I have some influence with the press. I intend to use it without delay.
I say, have you seen this?
Another juicy headline?
No. Our wily old tycoon, Sir Luke Frinsby, has burst into print. There's an interview with him on the front page.
Oh, what's he say?
I have every confidence, a reporter was informed yesterday by Sir Luke Frinsby, the city magnate, who is chairman of the governing body of Colchester School, that the police will soon succeed in laying their hands upon the person implicated in this callous crime. We're giving them every possible help, and I'm glad to say that the assistance of Scotland Yard was invoked from the first. Meanwhile, Sir Luke added, the routine of the school is not affected, and work will proceed as usual.
I think that's very tactful. The public have been reassured.
Tax be damned. That's the trouble with this school. It's governed by a lot of doddering old fogies.
You've no right to say things like that, Spencer.
Why not? Why don't we have some straight speaking for change? Why not tell the public the truth? That the school's upside down at the moment. The police snooping about all over the place. Everybody going about as though they were in instant fear of arrest. Work will proceed as usual. What a lot of eyewash.
I say, have any of you seen Starkey?
Yes, I saw him a couple of minutes ago in the quad. He said he'd be coming along to the common room in about 5 minutes.
Oh, I'll wait for him here. Oh, in the meantime, I have an intriguing bit of news.
Oh.
You remember the trip you took last Hull, Spencer, with some of your boys climbing at Zermatt?
Very well.
And you ended up at Lugano.
We did.
Where you ran into Thorold.
Mm. It was as surprising as finding Smith at the top of the Matterhorn.
Yes. Well, I've only just learned that Mrs. Grange was staying at Lugano at the very same time as Thorold.
Really? How on earth did you find that out?
I dropped in for tea at the Granges yesterday afternoon. Grange wasn't there, but his wife was, and Mrs. Shurey. She let the cat out of the bag. Apparently she knows someone who lives in Lugano and happened to meet Mrs. Grange quite by accident. Well, Mrs. Shurey mentioned that she'd had a letter from her. In a rather a pointed way, I thought. Anyhow, Mrs. Grange looked pretty embarrassed.
Well, well, well. Thorold and Mrs. Grange both at Lugano. 2 and 2 make 4. Where was Grange?
Oh, he was at camp at Salisbury on an OTC course.
Conveniently out of the way. Dear, dear, what a wicked world we live in.
I think we should avoid jumping to conclusions, Spencer. No doubt there was a very good reason why Mrs. Grange went to Lugano for her holidays.
Mm, I'm sure there was.
And not the one you imply?
Still, it does throw an interesting light on things, doesn't it? An ugly motive rears its head. Thorold's death may have been a crime passionnel.
Oh, come, Spencer. You can't imagine Grange committing murder.
Well, what about Mrs. Grange?
Nonsense. She wouldn't spot a fly.
Somebody probably said that about Lizzie Borden.
Which reminds us of our own dear Borden. He hasn't cleared himself yet.
Well, there goes the bell. Ask Collars, the waiters.
I think it's about time.
You're an old clam, Smith. You sit there puffing at your pipe and say nothing. Who do you really think killed Thorold?
I haven't made up my mind.
Well, tell us when you do.
Sir, have you seen the newspaper this morning?
No, not yet, Hamilton.
There's a report on the inquest of our late lamented headmaster.
Is there?
It's a spirited piece of writing, sir. By a special correspondent.
Oh, one of those.
Don't you approve of them, sir?
No. Not particularly, Hamilton.
He draws a striking contrast between the sordidness of the crime and the academic peace and ancient beauty of our quadrangle and its surroundings.
I'm sure he does.
I liked one bit especially, sir. He said that, standing on the close-mown turf in the tranquil sunshine, it was difficult to think that across these old world walls, reeking with history, had fallen the shadow of the slayer. Don't you think that's rather good, sir?
I don't much care for reeking with history.
No, sir, that is a bit thick, isn't it?
Mm.
And I suppose no one thought of telling him that those old world walls only go back as far as 1902 when Colchester was rebuilt. Sir, may I speak to you in confidence?
Yes, of course, Hamilton.
Something's been on my mind, sir, and with your permission, I'd like to get it off my chest. If you'll pardon the mixed metaphor.
Yes, what is it?
Well, sir, I had a late pass into Colchester last Saturday night on account of my parents coming down from London for the weekend.
Yes?
Well, I spent the evening with them at the White Hart. It was after 10:30 when I got back to school. As I crossed the quad, I noticed the light burning in the headmaster's study. Then, at the corner of the cloisters, I came across a rifle propped up against one of the pillars. An OTC rifle, sir.
Well?
Well, it seemed odd that it should have been left lying there. I left it where it was, of course. I didn't think it was any of my business to touch it. But just before I got into bed, I happened to look out of the dormitory window and saw Mr. Grange coming across the lawn, carrying a rifle in his hand.
Well?
Well, I thought about that a lot, sir.
Have you handled it?
Yes, sir.
Why?
Well, sir, it was a coincidence, wasn't it?
What was?
Well, then Mr. Green should have been carrying a rifle that very night. And why did he take it into his house?
How do you know he did?
Well, I watched him, sir, from the dormitory window. And if it's the missing rifle, why hasn't he given it to the police long ago?
You mustn't let your imagination run away with you, Hambledon.
No, sir. And I don't want to speak ill of a housemaster.
No.
But there's another thing. There was quite a scene going on in Mr. Granger's house on Saturday morning. I thought of that, too.
Yes? What sort of scene?
Well, I had to take a book round to him. As I got to the door, I could hear him shouting inside the house, quite violently, sir. Then when he opened the door, I caught sight of Mrs. Grange rushing through the hall in tears and looking as white as a sheet.
So?
Well, I should have said I'd been having a pretty hectic quarrel, sir.
I'm not a married man myself, Hambledon, but I believe that married couples do have their little differences from time to time.
Oh, yes, sir. My parents often have a real ding-dong. But this looked like something more serious. Mr. Grange looked awful.
I say, Hambledon.
Hmm?
Oh, sorry, sir. I didn't know you were here.
That's all right, Gravener. You seem rather excited.
Well, sir, it is pretty exciting, isn't it?
What is?
You haven't heard, sir. They've found the missing rifle.
Good show. Where?
In the lake. It was lying in the reeds in not more than a foot of water. Of course, all the fingerprints will have been washed off.
Ah, pity. When did this happen?
About half an hour ago, sir. What I don't understand is why the police have taken all this time to find it. I mean, it was in such a conspicuous position. They've been searching the school grounds for days. You'd have thought they'd have seen the rifle long ago.
Perhaps it wasn't there. Perhaps someone only threw it into the lake last night.
That's an idea. But he must have been a pretty poor shot.
How do you know it was a he? It might have been a woman. A rifle would be too heavy for a woman to fling very far.
Yes, maybe you've hit on something. Makes you think, though, doesn't it?
Mm.
There must be some people who know more about Mr. Thorold's death than they're saying. Don't you agree, sir?
I think that if anyone knows anything at all about this crime, it's their duty to go to the police at once and say so.
They may be afraid to go to the police, sir.
Then they should go to Mr. McElraith. They should also remember that until this crime is solved, Polchester and all of us who live here are under the darkest cloud.
Hello, Mr. Smith.
Good evening, Mrs. Grange.
Did you want to see my husband? He's here.
Well, I thought I'd just look in for a few minutes and see you both, if I'm not disturbing you.
Well, of course you're not. Do come in.
Thank you.
As a matter of fact, Henry will be glad you've come. He was going to send a note around to you asking you if you'd call in this evening.
Really?
Henry? Yes, Mr. Smith.
Oh, my dear fellow, come in. I'm damn glad to see you. You're the one person Betty and I want to talk to.
I've just been telling him.
Oh, sit down, have a drink.
I don't think you. I won't have anything, if you don't mind.
No, of course not. Oh, to be frank, we're in the devil of a hole, and we don't know what to do about it.
What's the matter?
Bluntly, I'm suspected of murder.
Oh,
and
no.
That fellow from Scotland Yard, what's his name?
Inspector Bracewater.
Yeah, well, he's been round to the house asking all sorts of questions.
Beastly, insinuating questions.
Yeah, the trouble is, we gave him conflicting answers to some of them.
Why did you do that?
Well, we didn't mean to, of course, but he was pretty artful. He questioned Bessie on her own while I was out of the house.
Well, naturally, I didn't want to say anything that would show Henry in a bad light.
Of course, when I came in, I didn't know what Betty had told him. We hadn't a chance to compare notes.
Oh, I'm to blame for it all.
Oh, darling, don't be silly.
But I am, Henry. To begin with, I hid the rifle. And then I lied about it.
What rifle?
The one I picked up on Saturday night when I was crossing the quad.
Tell Mr. Smith what happened on Saturday, Henry.
Yes, well, to begin with, Betty and I quarreled that morning. It was utterly senseless, of course, and I behaved badly. I banged out of the house and stayed out all day, roaming about the countryside. I didn't get back till late in the evening. Then I stumbled on this rifle. It was leaning against the wall by the cloisters. I knew it oughtn't to have been left lying about like that, so I took it home with me.
I hadn't gone to bed. I was sitting upstairs in my room waiting for him. Then I heard his footsteps. I looked out of the window and saw Henry coming across the grass in front of the house, carrying a rifle. I was petrified.
She actually thought I was going to use it.
Well, you can laugh about it now, Henry, but I was sure something awful was going to happen.
So when I was asleep, Betty crept out of bed, went down to the hall where I'd left the rifle, and hid it.
Yes, I shoved it in the cupboard under the stairs and took the key.
Naturally, the next morning I couldn't find it. I asked the maid. She said she hadn't seen it.
And by then I was ashamed of myself, so I lied to Henry and said that I hadn't seen it either. Then someone came and told us that Mr. Thorold had been shot dead during the night. I was simply horrified. I knew how angry Henry had been when he left the house the previous morning, and how jealous.
Jealous? Of whom?
Of Mr. Thorold. That was what our quarrel was about. Henry had heard insinuating things being said. Just because, well, quite by chance, I happened to be staying in Lugano at the same time as Mr. Thorold. Naturally, well, Henry was upset. I didn't know what he might have done in the rage he was in. I hardly believed him when he said he'd stumbled upon that rifle accidentally. Then I found something else. Two boxes of cartridges in a drawer in his desk. Well, that frightened the life out of me. It seemed madness to leave them there when the police would probably be searching every house in the school before very long. So I hid them in a drawer in my bedroom.
As it happened, darling, that was the worst thing you could have done.
I know, but, well, it shows you the state of mind I was in. When the inspector came and started questioning me, I was so terrified I scarcely knew what I was saying. Oh, of course, I should have refused to answer any of his questions until you came in. I almost fainted with relief when I heard the sound in the hall.
Darling!
I'm in the sitting room. Henry, this is Inspector Bracewater.
Oh, Mr. Grange? Yes? Your wife has been good enough to answer several questions that it's been my duty to put to her. Well, now that you're here, I have one or two that I should like to ask you.
Oh, what are they?
You are, I believe, the officer in charge of the school's OTC.
Yes, I am.
Therefore, I take it you're in control of the miniature rifle range.
Yes.
Do you sometimes practice there yourself?
Yes, I do.
Using, of course, the school ammunition.
Yes, .22 cartridges.
Do you keep any of these cartridges in the house?
Yes, a few.
Had you any in your house on the Saturday when Mr. Thorold met his death?
Yeah, I had a couple of boxes.
Full boxes?
No, one was half empty.
Have you done any rifle practice since that day?
No, the range has been closed.
So the two boxes are still as they were?
Yes.
But where do you keep them?
Oh, in a drawer in my desk over there.
I might have seen them.
Yes, of course. That's funny.
What's the matter?
I'm not here.
Perhaps you put them in one of the other drawers.
I'm sure I didn't. I'll look. Oh, I don't understand.
You can't find them?
No.
I see. Tell me, do you usually keep a rifle in the house?
No, all rifles are locked up in the store when they're not in use on the range.
But on the Saturday night in question, you did have one in the house, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Why?
Well, I found a rifle lying about near the cloisters that I knew shouldn't have been there. I brought it home with me.
Why didn't you take it to the store?
Well, it was late. I knew the store would be locked up.
Well, what did you do with the rifle when you brought it in the house?
I left it in the hall.
But Mrs. Granger just told me that there was no rifle in the house.
My wife didn't know anything about it. She was in bed when I came in.
What time would that be?
The school clock was striking 10:45 as I crossed the quad.
According to your wife, you came home shortly before 10:00. She opened the door to you. You said you were tired and went up to bed at once.
Oh, Inspector, if my wife's made statements that don't tally with mine, what else can you expect under the circumstances? Isn't it only natural that she'd wish to protect me?
Then I ask you again, Mrs. Grange, were you aware that your husband brought home a rifle with him and left it in the house?
My husband was in a state of great mental agitation that day. If he brought a rifle home
with him... Answer my question, please. Did you know there was a rifle in the house?
Yes.
Well, what happened to it?
I took it and put it in a cupboard under the stairs.
The same night?
Yes.
Why did you do that?
It was in the way...
But your husband has just said that you were in bed asleep when he returned.
So I was. During the night, I went down to the kitchen to make myself a hot drink. Well, that's when I saw the rifle in the hall.
Did you tell your husband what you'd done with it?
No. I forgot.
He didn't ask you?
I can't remember.
What did you think the next morning, Mr. Grange, when the rifle had disappeared from the hall? Did you forget all about it, too?
No. I asked the maid if she'd seen it.
But not your wife?
I may possibly have mentioned it. I'm not sure.
You were very casual about this rifle, weren't you? So it seems that your wife. Even when you knew the police were searching for a missing rifle, neither of you said anything about it. Why not? I suggest your wife said nothing because she was trying to shield you.
Shield me? From what? You suggesting that I had something to do with Thorold's death?
You had a rifle in your possession the night he was killed and two boxes of cartridges. Oh. You can't find the cartridges. Well, what about the rifle? Presumably it's still in the cupboard. I should like to see it.
You can't.
I know that, Mrs. Grange. It isn't there, is it? Shall I tell you why? Because either you or your husband took that rifle and flung it into the lake in the school grounds sometime during last night.
You'll have to prove that, Inspector.
Don't worry, Mr. Grange. We shall do our best to.
With that, he got up and left us. I was shaking all over, you see. He was right.
Right about what, Mrs. Grange?
About the rifle being found in the lake. I threw it there.
Good gracious.
Henry knows now. I told him, but... he didn't know when the inspector was here.
Whatever made you do such a thing?
I was frightened. I wanted to get rid of it. I thought the lake was the safest place. Fortunately, I didn't throw it far enough.
Hadn't you better be quite honest and tell the inspector?
And risk getting Henry into more serious trouble.
It seems serious enough as it is.
Well, they can't prove anything against him.
I'm not so sure about that, darling. They've got quite a lot of circumstantial evidence. Enough possibly to issue a warrant for my arrest.
Don't, Henry.
I certainly think you should consult your solicitor, Grange, before anything else happens.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
And I should do so quickly, if I'm you.
Yes, why not tonight, Henry?
Hardly, darling. In any case, I don't know his private number. Oh, the morning will be time enough. For heaven's sake, let's have some more whiskey.
Come in.
You told me to come to your study, sir, after classes.
Yes. Close the door. Coleman, I've always looked upon you as a sensible, intelligent, well-behaved boy. You do your work well. You give no trouble. You're quite a credit to your class.
Thank you, sir.
Will you tell me then why you went out of your way this morning to create that foolish disturbance during history, not to mention your rudeness to me?
Oh, sir, I'm frightfully sorry. I didn't mean to be rude. I only wanted to speak to you in private, and I couldn't think of any other way of managing it.
I don't understand you, Coleman.
Well, sir, I heard Grosvenor talking about what you had said to him the other morning.
Oh, and what did I say?
That if anyone knew anything about the death of Mr. Thorold, they should go to the police. And if they were afraid to go to the police, then to Mr. McElraith, sir.
Well?
Mr. McElraith isn't very easy to talk to, sir, so I've come to you.
Of all the extraordinary boys. You mean you created that rumpus in class purposely to secure this interview?
Oh, yes, sir. I knew that if I behaved badly enough, you'd want to see me later in your study.
But if you wanted to speak to me, why didn't you come in the ordinary way?
I wanted to look as if I hadn't come to you of my own accord, sir. I didn't want the other boys to know I wanted to come and see you.
Well, why should that matter?
Well, they might think I knew something about the murder.
You must be careful of the words you use, Coleman. If you're referring to the death of Mr. Thorold, no one yet has been arrested for murder. In any case, why have you just made up your mind to take someone into your confidence? It's over a week since Mr. Thorold died.
I know, sir. At first, I thought I should never want to tell a soul. But now, after what's happened to Mr. Grange...
Mr. Grange?
Well, sir, they think he did it, don't they?
Who does?
Well, the police, Scotland Yard, everybody's talking about it.
Are they?
I mean, sir, you can't very well keep a thing like that dark, can you?
No.
So you see, sir, if I know that Mr. Grange isn't guilty, it's time I said so, isn't it?
I think you'd better tell me just what you do know, Coleman, without inventing anything.
Yes, sir. Well, sir, I was on the roof of the big school about the time that Mr. Thorold was killed.
You were what?
I was exploring, sir. I shinned up a water pipe outside the common room and got onto the roof that way.
Did you do this for a bit or something?
Oh, no, no, sir. No one else knew. I did it chiefly for exercise. Also, I wanted to see what the school looked like from up there.
Really?
So, when everyone in the dormitory was asleep, I got out of bed and made my way downstairs into the private part of the house and slipped out by Mr. Holt's front door. I knew that on Saturday nights he was always busy playing cards with some of the other masters. I wasn't afraid of being seen.
And what time was it when you did this?
The clock struck 10:45, sir, as I climbed onto the roof. You've no idea how loud it sounds up there, like Big Ben. Below me, I could see a light shining across the quad from the headmaster's study. Then I heard footsteps in the quad, and someone stopped in front of Mr. Thorold's window. I could see him quite clearly in the shaft of light. It was Mr. Balbo. He was behaving oddly, sir.
Oddly? What do you mean?
Well, sir, he kept walking backwards and forwards, in and out of the light, stopping each time opposite the headmaster's study and staring at the window. I couldn't make out what he was doing. I was afraid he might look up suddenly and see me on the roof, so I thought I'd better come down while I could. Just as I reached the water pipe, I heard a loud shot that echoed right round the quad. It made quite a din, sir. And then, after a moment, the sound of footsteps hurrying away into the distance. I didn't wait to hear any more. I shinned down the water pipe and made my way back to the dormitory as quick as I could. But I know it wasn't Mr. Grange who fired that shot.
Neither do you know that it was Mr. Balbo, Coleman.
But I saw him, sir.
Walking up and down the quadrangle, you say. Was he carrying a rifle?
Oh, no, sir.
Then how do you suppose he suddenly got hold of one?
Well, I've no idea, sir.
I'm sure you haven't. You've just put two and two together, Coleman.
Well, sir, you must admit it was a coincidence, wasn't it?
Coincidences are one thing, proof is another, Coleman. You've no proof as to who fired the shot you heard.
No, sir.
It could have been anyone. You just assumed that it was Mr. Balbo.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Well, I think if I were you, I should now try and forget the whole incident.
Yes, sir.
Yes. You were right to come and tell me, of course, to get it off your mind. Well, you've done that, and I think no more about it. There's just one thing, though.
Yes, sir?
No more on nocturnal expeditions, unless you wish to get into serious trouble.
No, sir. Thank you, sir.
It's an odd story altogether, Smith. Do you believe it?
Well, I see no reason not to, McElroy.
Coleman has a vivid imagination, you know. No doubt he also reads quite a number of detective stories. They all do.
Even so, I don't see why he should have invented this. To begin with, it shows him up in a bad light, climbing up onto this roof, infringing the rules of the school. It would have been better to say nothing if it wasn't true.
Yes, yes, that's certainly a point. And, of course, there's no denying that Balbo's behavior has been strange ever since this thing happened. You noticed, I suppose, how he broke down completely in chapel during my address about Thorold.
Yes, yes.
I must say it shocked me to see a grown-up person crying like that.
The Italians are an emotional people, McElroy. They don't consider it unseemly to weep in public.
Well, I think they should. It shows a lack of self-control.
Besides, Thorold had been very kind to him. It didn't seem to me strange that the young man should have been so grieved at Thorold's murder.
You say murder, Smith. I notice everyone now talks of murder.
Do you think it could have been anything else?
I don't see why it shouldn't have been an accident. Indeed, if Coleman's story is true, it only lends weight to that theory.
How exactly?
Well, Balbo finds a rifle in the cloisters, picks it up, inadvertently presses the trigger, not knowing that the rifle's loaded, and, of course, it goes off, and kills Thorold sitting at his open window. An infernal accident, Smith, nothing else.
I'd like to believe that you're right.
And Balbo's been very foolish not to admit this long ago. However, I've just sent Vance over to his house with instructions to ask him to come here at once. When he comes, I think there's only one way of dealing with him. I shan't beat about the bush. I intend to shock him into an admission before he has time to think. Moral courage is not a strong point of the Italian character. He'll probably crumple up at once and give us the whole story. Come in. Yes, Vance.
I went across to Mr. Balbo's house, sir, with your message. But he isn't there, sir. He's gone.
Gone? What do you mean?
He's left Polchester, sir.
What?
He went early this morning, it seems. I spoke to his landlady, She said that Mr. Balbo had kept a suitcase packed and ready for the last few days.
Oh.
He told her that his father was very ill in Italy and that he might have to leave suddenly at a moment's notice. So she wasn't surprised when he came to her this morning and said he'd received a cable from Italy and must go at once. He took his suitcase, paid his rent, and went off in his small car.
I see. Thank you, Vance. That's all I want from you just now.
Yes, sir.
What does one do now, Smith?
Telephone the police.
Is that necessary, do you think? If Balbo's father is ill, there's every reason why he should have gone home.
Without telling you? Without taking his leave properly?
No, he should have done that, of course. But you know how emotional Italians can be. Well, you've just told me so. They forget everything else at such a moment.
Well, in any case, isn't it your duty, McElroy, to report the movements of all masters to the police at a time like this?
Yeah, I suppose you're right. I suppose I shall have to. What do you make of it all, Smith?
Oh, I hardly like to say. But do you still believe that Torrell's death may have been an accident?
I'd prefer not to answer that for the moment.
Colchester 2232.
Personal call for Inspector Bracewater from London.
Hold on. I'll get him.
Inspector?
Yes, Sergeant?
There's a call for you. Personal call from London.
Good. I'll be waiting for that.
Hello? Inspector Bracewater speaking.
I have a call for you. One moment. Go ahead, caller. Hello? Is that you, Bracewater?
Yes.
Selby speaking, Scotland Yard.
Yes, Selby?
I've news for you. Reese Silvio Balbo. We've got him.
Good.
Two of our men picked him up this evening.
Where?
Dover. He was taking the night ferry to Calais. They're bringing him back to London now.
Any resistance?
Oh, none at all, I gather. Meek as a lamb. He's not been officially arrested, of course.
Well, can you get him here by 11 o'clock tomorrow morning? The inquest on Thorold is being reopened in the parish room at Polchester, before the coroner and local jury.
Right, I'll see he's handed over to you by then.
Thanks. I'll let you know what happens. Well, good night, Selby.
Good night, Inspector.
Members of the jury, I think it's only right of me to point out that the person standing before you now is a foreigner, an Italian, and as such is in a difficult position. I am sure that he will realize that he will receive nothing but the strictest justice from an English court if he answers our questions fully and frankly. Mr. Balbo, you are a master at Polchester School.
I am, sir.
A supplementary language master, I understand. You teach Italian and help in the teaching of French.
I do.
On the night of Saturday, the 21st of September, at about 10:45, you were observed in the school quadrangle. Will you tell us how you came to be there?
I had been for a walk, and I had come home, and I was crossing the quadrangle on the way to my house.
Do you live on the school premises?
Not exactly, sir. I have rooms in a small house out of the school gates. See, the landlady has always been very kind to me.
Crossing the quadrangle, it seems that you stopped opposite Mr. Thoreau's house and then started walking backwards and forwards and staring at the window of his study.
Yes.
Presumably, you could see Mr. Thorold sitting by the open window, writing.
Yes, I saw him.
Why did you walk up and down like that?
I was making up my mind.
To do what?
To go and speak to the headmaster.
At that time of night?
Well, I saw he was alone. I thought it might be a good moment to speak to him.
What about?
A scheme that had preoccupied me for some time.
A scheme?
A plan for extending the classes.
But on second thoughts, you decided not to speak to Mr. Thorold, at least, not that night.
See, I decided not to.
What made you change your mind?
It was an accident.
What sort of accident?
My foot struck something at the corner of the cloisters. It fell to the ground. It was for chili. It was a rifle. I picked it up, and my finger was on the trigger. I do not know what happened. There was an explosion, and I was horrified. I did not know the rifle was loaded.
At what level was the rifle when it fired?
Level?
I mean, was it in line with your knee, your waist, your shoulder?
It was about here, sir.
I see, almost level with your shoulder. And pointing in which direction? Towards the cloisters or out across the quadrangle?
Yes.
Towards the quadrangle. And at that time, you were standing facing the headmaster's study.
Yes.
So the gun was pointing at the open window. This is distressing for you, Mr. Balbo, I know, but you must answer my question. Was the gun pointing at the window?
See.
When you realized that the gun had fired, what did you do?
I threw it on the ground and ran away. I was afraid.
Afraid of what? You say it was an accident. Then it could have happened to anyone. Why should you have wished to conceal the fact?
It was stupid of me, sir. I know. I didn't think then.
And afterwards, when you heard of Mr. Thorold's death, you still said nothing. Why?
I had not the courage.
Yet 2 days ago, you suddenly left Polchester without warning, drove to the coast, intending to cross the Channel.
Yes.
Well, surely that was the most suspicious thing you could have done. You told your landlady that your father was gravely ill in Italy and that you had to go to him at once. Was that true, Mr. Balbo? Or did you just run away?
It was not true.
I see. Then you did a very foolish thing.
I'm sorry.
Very well. You may sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Members of the jury, our inquiry into this regrettable affair has now ended. You have just listened to the witness, Silvio Balbo. It is possible that you formed the opinion, as I certainly did, that he was concealing nothing but telling the exact truth. If you believe him, and that is a matter upon which you must form your own judgment, then there seems no doubt that the death of Mr. Thorold was due to a sheer accident. Here we have a man picking up a stray rifle, unaware that it's loaded, carelessly pressing the trigger, and a shot is fired at random. It's not essential to our inquiry to know how the loaded rifle came to be where it was. We are inquiring into the manner in which the deceased met his death, and whether he was killed deliberately or accidentally. By the law of England, homicide is a matter viewed in very different lights according to the circumstances. There's such a thing as involuntary homicide, when a man is killed quite unintentionally. And you may, when you come to a full consideration of all the evidence, take the view that this is a case in point. That is for you alone, gentlemen, to decide. It may be that you will come to the conclusion that the death of Mr. Thorold was an inadvertent accident, and that no person is criminally responsible. You may also think that for the witness, Silvio Balbo, the knowledge that a thoughtless action of his brought about this tragedy will be punishment enough and a lifelong source of regret to him. It now remains for you to give your verdict.
Well, I think that all went off very satisfactorily, don't you, Smith?
Yes, Sir Luke, yes. But I'm sorry for Balbo.
Oh, of course, so am I. But it could have been a great deal worse for him. I thought the verdict was very fair. Carelessness, but no criminal intent. We must thank the coroner for not confusing the issue with a lot of irrelevant facts. No, I don't think it could have gone better.
I couldn't help wondering what Inspector Bracewater thought of it all. Did you notice him at the end?
No, I can't say I did.
Oh, quite obviously. He didn't agree with the verdict. I was watching him. He snatched up his papers angrily, frowned, stalked out of the room.
The police like convictions, Smith. They're inclined to feel frustrated when they don't get one. In a way, I suppose one can't blame them. The more feathers in their cap, the better their chance of promotion. Personally, I don't intend to lose any sleep over Inspector Bracewater's disappointment. I'm thankful we've seen the last of him.
The last of him? I wonder.
Do you think pens would take these end-of-term reports as seriously if they could see us writing them?
They'd be mad if they did. Oh, I shall never get through this pile tonight.
Well, the thing is, you've got to be so damn careful what you say these days. When I was a boy, if I got a bad report, my parents played hell with me. Nowadays, they play hell with the schoolmaster and write him an abusive letter.
I know. Mr. and Mrs. Grogram complained to the head about my report last term. But what on earth can you say about such a horrid boy as Grogram?
But he has red hair and smells.
Oh, no. Oh, help me, somebody. I've come to that lout, Moonface Jenkinson. What can I say about him?
You can't go wrong with tries hard.
Oh, don't be an ass, Spencer. Number in form, 23. Place in form, 23. Placed by examination, 23. Oh, he's a hopeless specimen.
Well, what about is congenitally unsuited to work?
Thank you. I don't wish to get the sack.
Put down your papers, gentlemen. Listen to this.
Eh?
Front page of this evening's paper. It is now known that the Scotland Yard officers, charged with the investigation into the death of the headmaster of Polchester School last September, have decided to reopen the case.
Reopen it?
Early developments are expected.
I wonder what unsavory burn they've dug up now.
Well, it doesn't surprise me.
Oh, why, Spencer?
Well, obviously, quite a number of things were politely glossed over at the inquest.
What do you mean, glossed over?
Well, had I been a member of the jury, I should have felt inclined to ask one or two pertinent questions. But nobody did.
Such as?
Well, it never seemed to occur to anyone that Thorold might have been dead already, before Balbo picked up the rifle and fired.
Oh, that's pretty far-fetched, isn't it?
I don't think so. He could have been killed some minutes earlier by another shot.
In that case, when we were playing cards in my house, we would have heard two shots, not just one.
Not necessarily.
Huh? Well, what do you mean?
Well, it depends where the first shot was fired from. You know, it'd be interesting to carry out an experiment. And another thing I should have asked, how did the rifle come to be left by the cloisters? Why was it loaded? Who loaded it?
If I remember rightly, Spencer, the coroner said that wasn't essential to the inquiry.
Well, strictly speaking, perhaps not. But it would have been interesting to know.
Yeah, do you suppose this has anything to do with the chairman's sudden visit? I saw Sir Luke drive up in his car about half an hour ago. He went straight away to McElroy's house.
Really? That's odd, isn't it? To drive down to Polchester at this time of night, 2 days before the end of term.
Gentlemen, the real fun may only be beginning. Early developments are expected. We may live and learn.
Well, McElraith, I think I owe you a word of explanation. My visit here tonight, it must have surprised you.
I confess it did, Sir Luke.
As you can imagine, only something of vital importance would have made me descend upon you like this without warning.
I did wonder.
No doubt you've seen the evening newspaper?
Yes, I did glance at it.
Did you, Smith?
No, I haven't seen it.
Apparently Scotland Yard wasn't satisfied with the results of the inquiry into Thorold's death. They intend to reopen the case.
Oh?
Yes, it's mentioned on the front page.
It seems to me deplorable to rake up the whole thing again. Can't they let sleeping dogs lie?
I seem to remember you were well satisfied with the verdict, McElraith.
I certainly was. I think you were too, Sir Luke.
Yes, at the time. But you weren't, Smith.
No, not entirely. I thought certain things were never properly explained.
But you believe that Thorold was shot by Balbo, accidentally, of course.
Everything pointed to it, I must say.
But had you doubts?
Well, perhaps.
If Balbo wasn't the guilty person, then who do you think was?
No, I couldn't tell you.
Now, let us, for the sake of argument, call the unknown person Jones. Now, what reason had Jones for killing Thorold? He must have had a pretty strong motive.
It might, I suppose, be on account of money. Thorold was heavily in debt.
Oh, you knew that?
Oh, yes. He confided in me one night when I walked back with him to his house. He was very upset. Of course, I was shocked. Thorold was the last person I should have thought
of. Exactly. So perhaps, as you say, money lies at the root of the whole mystery. Thorold needed to raise money desperately or face the loss of his job. Ruin. He may have reached the point at which it didn't seem to matter very much how he raised it. Now, suppose Thorold knew some secret about Jones, something reflecting perhaps on his moral character, something that would be sufficient to damn Jones as a schoolmaster, and Thorold decided to make use of that knowledge.
That would be blackmail, Sir Luke.
Oh, yes, I agree. It's an ugly thought. But the position would then be this. Thorold wanting money and Jones wanting silence. The chance of a deal. Jones would have no alternative but to comply with Thorold's demands. The stage would be set for drama, gentlemen.
But not murder.
Possibly Jones never contemplated anything so violent as murder. At least, not until that fatal Saturday night.
Ah, yes, I see.
I don't know, but I can imagine the scene. He's walking by the quadrangle. He sees the light coming from Thorold's study window and the figure of the headmaster sitting at his desk writing. By accident, he suddenly stumbles upon the rifle that Borden, in his drunken stupor, flung away. It's almost as if fate had put a weapon in his hand. Perhaps only at this very moment does the idea of killing Thorold enter his mind.
But aren't you forgetting, Sir Luke, that the rifle wasn't loaded? When Borden tried to fire it, nothing happened. Obviously, he was innocent, which was proved, fortunately.
Yes, but that doesn't mean to say that Jones couldn't have loaded the rifle. Perhaps he'd been practicing on the range that same day. Perhaps he had one or two spare cartridges in his pocket. Surely that's possible.
Yes, I suppose it is.
Very well, then. He's able to load the gun. Then what does he do? As I see it, he steals across the quadrangle until he's within a few yards of the open window. He takes aim and fires at point-blank range. A second shot is unnecessary. Thorold is dead. Jones leaves the rifle still primed against a pillar of the cloisters, where Balbo found it. And then Jones makes his way home.
Where?
Ah, if we knew the answer to that question, Smith, we'd be able to lay our hands on Jones. All we know is that he disappeared into the darkness. Still, if I were Jones at this moment, I shouldn't be feeling very comfortable. The net is drawing tighter. He must know that he can't escape. I think one can feel almost pity for him.
Pity for a murderer?
Well, at least pity for his predicament.
Ah, yes.
Do you think I might have a drop more of your excellent whiskey, McElraith?
Of course, Sir Luke, of course. Smith?
No, thank you, and if you'll excuse me, I'm afraid I must be getting along. I've several reports to finish tonight.
End of term, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Busy time for you all.
Yes, indeed. Well, good night, Sir Luke.
Good night, Smith. Oh, I'll look in on you in the morning before I leave.
Ah, good. Good night, McElraith.
Good night. Your whiskey, Sir Luke.
Oh, thank you, McElraith.
Tell me, have you ever tried your hand at writing a play?
You're joking, McElroy.
No, I'm not. I think you have a flair for plots.
Really? What makes you say that?
Well, I think your reconstruction of the crime is quite fascinating.
But hardly convincing?
I wouldn't say that. It holds water up to a point.
Up to which point?
You assume that Thorold knew some secret about this mysterious man, Jones. A secret that could wreck his career.
Yes.
Isn't that taking rather a lot for granted? And what could the secret possibly be?
I can imagine what it might be.
Can you? I confess I can't.
Call it a moral lapse.
Of what kind?
The oldest kind in the world. An affair with some woman. Perhaps an illegitimate child.
Oh, surely.
Such a thing would do no harm to a businessman, but it could shatter the career of a schoolmaster, as you know.
Yes, yes, I grant you that. Even so, supposing that was the secret, how on earth could Thorold know it?
Well, supposing the woman, whoever she was dependent upon Jones for money. Jones may have grown tired of her. Perhaps he refused to support her any longer. In those circumstances, what would a woman like that be likely to do? She would be desperate. She would have nothing to lose. What is to prevent her from writing a letter to Thorold begging him to use his influence with Jones?
It's feasible, but...
But unlikely, you think?
I should say so.
What if I were to tell you, McElroy, that that's exactly what happened?
How can you know that?
I have seen the letter. It was among certain private papers belonging to Thorold. It contains the name of the woman who wrote it and the name of the man she was writing about. The man I've called Jones. I don't need to keep up that pretense any longer, McElroy, do I? You know his name. His real name, don't you?
If you're trying to scare me, Sir Luke, you won't succeed. On the strength of a woman's hysterical letter, you can prove nothing.
Fortunately, I can leave that to Scotland Yard.
Only you won't, will you?
Won't I? What makes you so sure of that?
Because one thing means more to you than anything else, your own reputation. You won't endanger that if you can help it. You do everything you can to avert a scandal, anything to keep your name and the name of Polchester from being dragged down into the mire. That's why you've hastened here from London tonight. You're afraid of what may happen.
Aren't you?
Why should I be?
You've got nerve, McElroy. The game's up, and you know it.
Early on Friday morning, I shall take the train from here. I shall see the last of Polchester. I shall be on my way to London. London is a large city, Sir Luke. You have 48 hours to make up your mind. 48 hours to decide what you're going to do.
Can I pour your tea now?
Please. Oh, I say, how nice this is, isn't it? First morning of the holidays, sheer peace.
I know. Isn't heavenly? And then he realizes the noise those boys make when they've gone.
All the same, what would we do without them, darling?
Lots of things.
Such as?
We could travel.
On what?
Trains, ships, aeroplanes.
Using what for money?
Yes, of course we'd need money.
Exactly.
That must be the newspaper I'll go. You get on with your egg.
Right. Well, what's going on in the world this morning? Who started a revolution? Why? Where?
Henry.
Yes, darling?
Listen to this. An unlucky school, tragic death of another Polchester master. When
what?
The Southern Railway steamer SS Arundel arrived at Le Havre last night. Delayed 5 hours by storm, it was discovered that a first-class passenger was missing. The vessel had met with heavy seas, and it is feared that the person in question was washed overboard. Luggage and a passport, which were unclaimed, bore the name of James McElraith and an address at Polchester School.
McElraith?
Mr. McElraith had been acting headmaster since the death of Mr. Thorold, who was found shot dead in his study one night last September. Recently appointed headmaster of a school in Edinburgh, Mr. McElraith was to have proceeded to his new post in a month's time.
God, I don't understand. When I said goodbye to McElraith, Pete told me distinctly he was going to stay in London until it was time for him to travel north to Scotland. What could have made him change his mind?
Sudden whim, perhaps.
No, McElraith wasn't the sort of person to have whims about anything. Washed overboard, they say.
A shocking thing to happen.
Yes, if that's what did happen.
What do you mean?
Well, no one was there to prove it, I suppose.
What are you suggesting? Suicide?
Who knows?
Man like McElraith. No, I can't believe that, Henry. He was far too strong-minded, far too much in control of himself.
Yes, but...
Well, he had everything to look forward to. A new job, better pay, more important position. Can you imagine him flinging all that away?
It's something of a mystery, isn't it?
In Storm Over Polchester by R.C. Woodthorpe, adapted for broadcasting by Howard Agg, the part of McElraith was played by Duncan McIntyre. Thorold by Rolf Lefevre, Smith by Hayden Jones, Grange Gabriel Wolfe, Stevenson Kenneth Hyde, Sir Luke Frinsby Austin Trevor, Borden John Batterley, Ward Fraser Carr, Betty Grange Gudrun Ewer, Inspector Bracewater Frank Partington, Holt Norman Claridge, Spencer James Beattie, Hambledon Glyn Dearman, Coleman Jonathan Scott, Balbo Michael Goldie, the Coroner Lewis Stringer, Starkey John Broster, and Dr. Sherry Stephen Thorne. Other parts played by Arthur Gomez and members of the BBC Drama Repertory Company. The programme which was recorded was produced by Martin C. Webster.